You are like Lee to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seemed particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by
Hello and welcome to a much requested episode of the Grew Cafe. This is Rock. Of Spaz House for needcoffee.com, and I am joined in our gaming table area. We have Kim, also known as Oblique Red. Hi, Kim.
Hello.
And we have from the far flung cold weather of Germany, we have Dom. Hey, Dom, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. And this week we have a special guest. We have Kevin Petway of Heroes of a Lesser Earth comic, webcomic, and writer, blogger, Kevin Petway. Hey, Kevin.
Hi, everybody. Nice to meet y'all.
We're all about the guest stars here at Grew Cafe. To cover up the fact that half of us are gaming at any one particular taping session and can't be ours to come.
That's right.
That's not fair. Doc had to work. He's actually not on Xbox Live this time.
Yeah, but there's always, we'll talk about it later, but there's always a free game that you can play at work.
Very true. Very true.
So the reason we're assembled this time is somebody asked about DMing and tabletop RPGs. And I specifically asked my friend and neighbor Kevin, because he has written ad nauseum about gaming and his world of Heroes of a Lesser Earth. Do you want to talk about that real quick, Kevin?
I think ad infinitum is probably nicer than ad nauseum rocks.
He's gamed with us. That's why I'm saying it.
Ad nauseum is probably more appropriate. Did you have a specific question that you wanted me to answer, or just sort of
talk about what your comic is based on? It has just ended, and
I really pulled the world of the comic from an old GURPS game that we played a million years ago. Roxanne, you were actually a part of
it. I remember that.
Mm-hmm. And then when half of our GURPS team up and moved off to Texas, we kind of let it sit fallow. And then when I decided to do a webcomic, I had all this work already done. And so I cannibalized that for the comic, and then 5 years later, sort of returned back to gaming. And when we went to go play D&D, I had this world that I had about 6 or 7 years worth of time invested in, so I knew it pretty well and was able to take that and play the D&D game with it. It was kind of nice, just because, I did have the familiarity that you have with like something that you read all the time, Middle Earth or Pern or anything that you read a lot and are familiar with, but the added benefit that nobody else knew it because none of my friends read my comic.
I do. I really do. I buy the books.
She read it real quick right before this call.
I know the pages my character is in. Let's just say that.
Yes, yes, I am certain that you do. You do that.
Now, for your comic, just so everybody knows, it's Heroes of a Lesser Earth. It has ended, but you could go back and read it, people. It's basically the chatter, correct, about the players around the table, but you're looking at the actual characters, unlike Jolly Blackburn's Knights of the Dinner Table, correct?
Yeah, it's a very similar idea, but yeah, the visuals are pretty much exactly the opposite. So that, you know, you're actually in the game and watching the characters interact with each other and the monsters and all that stuff. But they're talking about their girlfriends and who's sleeping with who and what they saw on TV. And, you know,
there's a scene, people, where I'm working on a crossword puzzle.
Yes. Yes. There's a scene where you're working on a crossword puzzle. There's another one where, you know, the characters are fighting a dragon, except for one of them who's, you know, playing on his iPod, you know, that it's that type of thing. And, you know, I tried to pull from the actual experiences that we have all had sitting around the gaming table.
Right. So from there, have you taken anything since we do play? I play on Thursdays with Kevin, and we're playing Gamma World right now. What do you see is a fundamental hurdle for new DMs, people who want to sit behind the screen, as it's said in Knights of the Dinner Table? What is something that, and I think, Kim, we brought this up too, because you wanted people engaged more in the role playing aspect,
right?
Combat,
ways to trick people into role playing more,
right? Kevin, what do you think is a hurdle?
Well, probably the biggest hurdle for any brand new DM is stage fright. You know, actually being willing to sit up there in front of your friends and make an idiot of yourself, you know, and have it be okay. But you know, if you've ever played in anybody else's game, you're not doing anything that they're not already doing. And you know, if you enjoy it, then probably your friends are going to enjoy it when, you know, you do it similarly. There are really, in my opinion, there's really only one important thing to remember for a brand new DM. And actually, you know, this is something that people forget. Is it fun? And the idea is, if you've got people sitting around your table and, you know, they want to, you know, climb a tree, well, if they're just climbing a tree and there's no fighting going on or anything, you don't have to roll to climb that tree. You don't have to worry about whether the situation is realistic. You don't have to worry about any of that crap. You just think, well, is it fun, you know? Is this thing going to break my game? This thing that somebody wants to do that, because, you know, people come up with these dumbass ideas all the time, you know, but it makes sense to them. And it doesn't have to make sense to you. It's just, is it fun? Is this going to break my game? The answer is no, you let them do it. And if you just think about that one very simple rule working through your game, then the rest of it's kind of easy. Because players, if you let them, will do half the work for you.
Right.
Some players, like Roxanne, will do all the work for you if you let them.
That's true. Because I will try to thwart the idea for a DM any way I can. You know, I will walk down the other side of the sidewalk if I have to.
Yeah,
if I want to.
She thinks she's thwarting, but the truth is that, you know, I can come to the table with about a half hour's worth of material prepared and just sort of let Roxanne run.
Right.
And, you know, she'll do the rest of it for me.
And I think that's how, you know, as you've sat in on my game, is what I do. I barely come up with even that. Yeah. And we have two women at our table, Kevin's wife, Lena, and Carol. They will role play the hell out of Call of Cthulhu, and we're just dying laughing.
Was this we didn't have to go see your mom conversation you were telling us about previously?
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. But then later on, it just got just as good about them attacking a cab driver and dumping his body. It was great.
Oh my gosh.
It was awesome. And then, you know, they're at a restaurant and the maitre d' is like, oh, well, there's a cab out there. And they just dumped the cab and there's a dead body in there. And he was unconscious. They didn't know he was dead. They're like, oh, well, maybe, yeah, okay, we'll take that cab. So it's great. So yeah, honest, but
this cab just conveniently happens to be empty now.
Exactly. So yeah, there are people that do help the game along. You do run into, though, the DM that's like really strict about, you know, adhering to the adventure, because it is hard work. Yeah. But if they do realize it shouldn't be a ton of hard work, you know, and then your game should be easygoing. But yeah, you do, as a player, you do run into the DMs that are such a hard ass. You know,
you
like,
and I think sometimes that's also, I think there's two reasons. One of them is they're too new to be able to roll with the punches. It's like they only have material in one direction. So if you try to go in the other direction, they're going to panic.
Right.
And the other one is like they've spent so long envisioning every detail of the carving on the pommel of the sacred hilt of the divine challenge that if you decide you want to use the battle axe instead, it's going to like break their heart.
Yes.
So I think, you know, as a DM, you have to kind of meet that happy medium where you have enough material to kind of react to the way the flow of the game is going, mm-hmm. but you haven't committed yourself so heavily that you can't let the players do what they want, which actually kind of leads into one of the questions that we were asked, which was one of our listeners wanted us to talk about planning campaigns and doing a campaign with a group, which is interesting because I've actually not ever done a full campaign.
This is why I brought Kevin, because out of all of us, I mean, I do my one shots. I have my weird little Binghamton Call of Cthulhu. That's where I base all of mine. And it's not really like an overall campaign, just because evil is always perpetuated throughout time. Where Kevin has actually managed to create a campaign for us. And what about you, Dom? Are you in one at all right at the moment?
In a campaign?
Yeah. Like an ongoing.
It's epic. Ongoing. You could say that, but it's, of course, with the role playing system we're actually still working on. In that, I'm not the DM, but I've done a couple. And I actually like the, if you could put it like that, the Joss Whedon way of doing a campaign, because the way he did a Buffy season was pretty much the perfect way to build a campaign in a role-playing game, because you have the big bad, you have the monster of the week, and you have little hints to the big bads, and towards the end you compress it all and there's a big finale. That's a pretty easy way to keep the interest up.
I think that model
works for role-playing very well, actually better than with TV, because after the fourth season for Buffy it was kind of boring, actually.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. You can look at, you know, television is a good kind of dramatic form, I think, to look at, because it's episodic, just like all of our playing, because none of us are fortunate enough to be able to be like playtesters for Wizards and play for work all day.
Yeah.
So
people do that.
Yeah, I definitely agree, but I do think that if you're going to use an episodic TV format, The important thing to remember is that your game's going to be a lot more simple than that, because there's an awful lot that you can put, a lot of complexity that you can put into the plot of a television show when you already know that the protagonist is going to figure certain things out and go a certain direction that you simply can't do in a game. It's actually a really apt analogy for format. You just have to keep it really, really simple.
Yeah, don't use Fringe as your television show you're modeling after.
Yeah, exactly.
Or better, Lost with the finale.
Yeah.
Now, I know with
all, everyone's in purgatory.
Yeah, that's right.
Everybody's a sheet of paper.
You take damage.
Spoiler
alert. I know that with, like, say, Call of Cthulhu, you can get, like, the very large, and they sort of call them campaigns, and I see them, the books of, you know, like, Horror on the Orient Express and stuff. And these are large books that you can make into a relative campaign. If you go to yogg-sothoth.com, you can actually listen. They actually record their podcast or their game sessions. And they actually do a really – these guys are committed to playing this specific thing, you know, that they don't lose the, you know, my character all of a sudden wants to do this. So they're really adhering to the story arc that's presented by Chaosium. And it's an epic. You know, I would listen to it every once in a while, but, you know, they really adhere to, you know, the scenario, which it's, I mean, the book alone is like, what, $50 or something, one of them, you know, and then there's like Mountains of Madness. So they, those are really interesting. And, you know, I think if anything, if you plan a campaign, like, okay, like my world for Call of Cthulhu, which, okay, yes, I found character sheets online by somebody. They're totally crazy. But I did base it. What I did was I took a William Faulkner approach to my world, which was, okay, I know the denizens of Broome County and the surrounding New York State area, because they're all based on people from, you know, growing up. They don't know. They don't care. So I take that point, you know, and see it as sort of a Faulkner type thing, you know, where he came up with Yakunapaw County, and basically you're just playing in that world and it's just plain evil, you know. So it's campaign-ish like, but not really. It's still played in one realm, you know, well, like Greyhawk or something. Or
it very whatever. Much is. But I mean, if you want to use the television analogy, it's from the days of TV back before they had continuing storylines, you know, when they were just plugging in any episode at any point, because that, you know, with Roxanne's game, there is no overarching big bad that we're you know, heading towards. We play it once or twice a year, and it's always, you know, Monster of the Week. But right. That works really well for her style.
My style, yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is you have to know, you know, if you're as a DM and you want to do a campaign, you really have to know yourself. You know, you have to know, okay, do I want to adhere to, you know, what I want to do as a overall storyline? Or am I a Monster of the Week type person? And if you are a Monster of the Week type person, that's fine. You know, you can build, like I said, your world accordingly, you know. How is it going with you, Kim? Are you basing it on like a arc style? Because you're gaming with Andrew, right?
Yeah, I mean, that one, I think we're doing like a series of vaguely interconnected sort of one or two session adventures that are all set kind of in the same place, but there's not really been a through line. Mm-hmm. And that one that I'm playing in is like that. And then the one I'm DMing, we haven't actually met in a while because there's been upheavals and changes, and we're trying to figure out kind of who still wants to play and who's going to do it. It's one of those things where we have too many people for one party, but not enough for two.
Oh.
And so we're trying to figure out, okay, does everybody still want to be doing D&D, or do some people want to do something else? You know, well, you know how that goes. We're trying to kind of figure out exactly the best format. But what we were doing with that is like we were getting like pre-done adventures generally and running them for however many levels they took. I was actually thinking about doing Madness at Gardmore Abbey with them. Next, because they're at sixth level, and that just came out for sixth level, and it's cool. Have y'all looked at that one for D&D 4th edition? No. Madness at Gardmore Abbey is really, really neat. It came out in October, and one of the things I really like about it is it's designed for maximum replayability, in that there is a bad guy that can be any one of your three major, like, kind of quest giver characters. And you basically pick it before you run it, and the thing changes depending on who's the secret bad guy.
That's kind of neat.
So you can play it multiple times and it'll be different. And each potential bad guy has like three different potential motivations. So depending on what bad guy and what motivation, because it's built around the deck of many things. So it's like the fourth edition deck of many things, and what you end up is your party gets a card, and you're trying to reunite the deck in this abbey that was that belonged to the Paladins of Bahamut, and they used the deck in the history, and things went really, really bad. And so you're trying to reunite it. There's another party of adventurers that are trying to reunite it, and there's a secret person who's also trying to collect. And so as the DM, you're kind of running the other people behind the scenes, and your main party will encounter them from time to time. And you can either pick which path you want to take, or you can actually draw cards and randomize it. Like, they have a way to randomize it written into the book. So it's really, really well designed. It comes with the deck of many things. Like, it has a printed deck, and it's really cool. The character I actually play in the party where I'm playing is a chaos sorcerer, and I'm like, when we get sixth level, you've got to run this, because Tally, my character, who I named after a Mass Effect character, but yes, I'm like, Tally needs the deck of many things, you don't understand. I need to wield that as an implement.
Well, getting back to what Dom said about episodic television and like the Buffy world, is actually kind of, you know, what you were, you know, the problem you have, Kim, is how we've kind of solved that is Kevin has a story arc. And when that ends, like, I will play a filler and then it switches to another DM. So, you know, so there's always, you know, that there will be an end, but you'll come back to it. You know, you just get a sort of a short respite into playing something else.
Yeah, which we all appreciate.
Yeah.
And I know Doc's group tends to just kind of alternate. Like, they play something until they're tired of it, and then they alternate to something else. Like, I think they like to do Gamma World for a couple sessions. And I think, like he was saying, they do the thing where you roll it randomly and you get what you roll, which can be fun for a session or two. If you're willing to just kind of go with it and you know, play it up for whatever you rolled for.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been brave enough to do that, but I've always kind of wanted to, just to see how it would go.
Yeah, we used to do that all the time. It was the only way to do it.
Yeah.
It's kind of liberating, actually, if you play a character that you haven't prepared over a longer while, because you don't care that much about him.
Yeah.
Well, you're not afraid of losing him.
That is right.
Mm-hmm. The way it is now, you spend so much time trying to optimize and, well, if I take this feat instead of that feat, how's that going to go together? You know, and it can pay off. But there could be something very freeing of just, okay, I have really high wisdom and really low charisma, and wait, what?
Well, that's, you know, like me throwing a bunch of characters out on the table for Call of Cthulhu. Because it's like they're all crazy. They're all, you know.
It's like, the best system for that, because they're all the same on the sheet anyway. It's what you make of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Dom, are you playing a homebrew system?
Yeah, we have been working on that for, I think, 5 years now.
Oh, goodness.
Do you want to talk about that real quick?
I can, of course. It actually started because we were at this point where we were fed up with the flaws in the system we were playing, because if they're at a certain time, they become obvious. And so I started creating my own. And one of my best friends who I play with thought about, because he had just read The Dark Tower, to create a system specifically for that world. I think many people have done that.
That's awesome.
And actually, I'm still convinced that we managed, especially him, to build a role-playing system that would work simply just for that world. What would be the Cthulhu for the Dark Tower? I think that system actually worked, but it was too limiting for us, because we wanted to play more and we wanted to do different tech levels and different time zones and different worlds. So we have been working on the basis of that, and it's pretty far ahead by now. I mean, we are almost done with the rules, which is the most tricky part, and the rest is just, what do we need to throw in there still? What is missing? And then I think maybe in 6 months or so, we will have a done system for fantasy world and a little bit of steampunk. That would be the tech levels and the worlds we have. And we have a big-ass map, which I didn't work on at all. But actually, by now, the system is really, really good, and I'm pretty proud of it, especially of the parts I didn't do anything for, because everything else just feels to me like, oh, I've done that this 3 years ago, and it still works. That's nice. But I haven't done actively anything, any input with the, especially with the fighting rules, because after a certain point, they become boring to me. And they're very complicated. They're the most complicated part of it, because we try to balance out realism, fun, and that you can still play it in a way. Because if you do it too realistically, it works very well if you play it on a computer.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that is always the trouble, is abstracting and simplifying things to the point that you can actually carry them in your head and play them without having to refer to your books constantly all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have been working on that. We're actually now having about three levels of complexity in the fighting rules, so that the first level is very, very easy, and the second one, perfect for me, is pretty fun, and you have a lot of options. And the third one, I think, is still a little bit messy, but it's doable. If it's like always, in the end, you will have one guy on the table in a gaming session who's really, really familiar with the fighting rules, and he will explain everything to you if you need it. And the other guys are more for magic, and the DM just sitting there and hoping that they are right and not cheating.
I give points for cheating.
I know you do.
You're an evil DM, Ross. We've all come to know that.
If you have a DM who likes to kill characters, it's good if she gives points for cheating.
This is true.
I just like to give out random damage. That's all I like to do.
See, that's I think my biggest weakness as a DM, is I don't want to kill anybody. I haven't so far. And when it looks like it's getting close, I'm really afraid. Like, I think I'm more afraid of it than they are. I'm like, oh no, I rolled another 20. I'm really sorry.
I had to save the same player of character death two times for two reasons. First of all, he was too stupid to inform me that his hit points were getting low.
Oh.
So he actually deserved it, because he was playing pretty, pretty stupidly. And second reason was, it was not at a point in the adventure and in the campaign where I thought that he could or should die. So he was actually... By almost dying, he was...
Got killed in the tutorial level, did he?
Not that. But he was disturbing my storyline. I didn't like that.
They're not
supposed to die unless I want them to.
Here's an interesting question, and this will be good for new DMers. Is, okay, how, as a DM, do you handle players, and this could even be from, you know, gaming at a convention, people that have high intelligence, high wisdom, and you know they're not. I mean that is something a lot of people wind up running into time and time again.
I think that's easier actually to deal with than the opposite. If they have a high intelligence and wisdom and they don't have any ideas as players, you have them roll. You just say roll for intelligence or something, and if the role is high enough, you just give them an idea, write them on a piece of paper or something, or you say, you notice a small detail, it could be a lever, you know, and that usually helps. I think the opposite is a lot more tricky, because then you have very intelligent players who have an intelligence of an orc, and they're like, I'm trapped here in this orc body, and I could solve that riddle.
Yes.
Yeah, and I was really just going to say more or less the same thing. It's, you know, you can resolve it with dice, or even just, if it's something that you think is obvious, dispense with the dice and say, you know, well, you know this fact about that situation. Yeah. And then allow the player to actually make a decision. Don't make a decision for them. Just say, you know, well, you know this thing. But the other way, you're actually having to rely on the player to behave honestly to the concept of the character, and that's completely different. That's much more difficult.
Okay.
I actually heard of a player once who solved that. He played a very stupid character, and the rest of the group could not solve a riddle, and they were stuck. So he actually saw through the whole thing, and what he did was he was toying around with it, because his character was a very playful character, and he just solved the riddle step by step by acting as a fool. And I still think that is great role-playing. And since he saw that the group was stuck, it was okay. And therefore, he... well, there is this one thing. I have a couple of rules for gaming, but there is one prime directive, and it is to have fun. And
yeah.
He helped them all to get along. So I think it was very, very smart.
Yeah, I've played a few really stupid characters and really had a lot of fun with it. But for me, it became a lot easier if I also made them very, very nice people.
Mm. Yeah.
Because then, you know, you add in a sort of an innocent quality to the character, and you actually can bring the whole party together that way. Because, you know, everybody sort of sees that character as somebody who needs to be protected. And then all of a sudden, these people who may have completely disparate aims are working in concert, which can be a lot of, you know, it can be a lot of fun.
I got a wizard hat. Yeah.
Yes, I gave you a wizard hat.
I got a wizard hat.
With the doubles, is that over?
No, it's just a plain one. It had stars on it.
I think okay. It did have stars. Yeah, this was the one that Roxanne is thinking about was a GURPS game. And I don't know who has played GURPS here. But they have disadvantage. Okay. One of the disadvantages of the character was that he couldn't have money. And the way we resolved that is every time he got money, he just immediately spent it. And so he would go out and buy, you know, just silly things for the other characters because, you know, he loved them all. So and you know, Roxanne got a wizard hat.
And we didn't know this. I didn't know you took that quirk. So I'm like, why are you spending your money? Oh, because I like you. I'm like, but you need to. So there again, you get a chance to role play, you know, if that helps you out at all. Kim, you know, it's like that is the one thing I do really like, and just sort of a side note on GURPS is the amount of quirks and disadvantages and advantages that D&D just doesn't have.
It's the best part of the system, actually.
It is. It really is.
The rest of GURPS is pretty.
Oh my god, yeah. But if you can supplement a thing where you have quirks and disadvantages and stuff, oh my god, it's so, you know, because then you can really play yourself if you want.
Well, and think about that, Roxanne, because that particular disadvantage gave you a role play opportunity too, because you very much mothered that character. You ended up taking all of his money and spending it for him.
That's right.
Well, it was hysterical because anytime I needed something, you know, I was like, can I have this? And, you know, she'd go out and get it for me. And, you know, it was really cute. But, you know, actually that does bring up a tip that I like to do for players. When you are, when you have a character and it is going to be more than just like a one or two off, make up a couple things. If you're not playing GURPS and you don't have a system of disadvantages or whatever, make up a couple things about your character's past. And it doesn't have to be like, you know, like a history, but maybe some significant things that happened to him. He got dumped by, you know, his favorite girlfriend who was a redhead, or, you know, his father was an alcoholic or something like that. And don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody else at the table about these things about your character. And then when situations come up where, you know, maybe that element of his past could color how he would react, go ahead and have him react that way, but nobody else knows. But it actually, it gives your character some more depth and, mm-hmm. and makes him seem much more like a real person.
Yeah, certainly don't tell people you've been blackmailing your slaver father for money every week.
No, you should.
Don't tell people. Don't tell people that.
Because if they're good, they'll try to stop you, and if they're bad, they'll try to point out your actions.
Yes, yes. So should we move on? Should we move on to our next topic, or did somebody?
Yeah,
else?
I have one more thing.
You did? Okay, good.
Okay,
we'll wrap up this and then move on. Okay. The one thing I wanted to add, talking about campaigns, is I think a lot of times when you're new and you want to do a campaign, you have these grand ideas and you try to write out like the whole epic plot line from level 1 to level 30 all in one swoop. Don't do that. Like, start with something small, because when you think about it, you always start with something small. You don't discover that you have to, you know, kill the evil whatever or reunite the lost MacGuffins of the Holy Hills. It's, you know, somebody stole your uncle's sheep, or, you know, so the bandits have been plaguing the shipping lanes. It always starts with something small, and then you gradually uncover more and more and more towards something bigger. So you can actually kind of grow it more organically, and that will also help the players have hooks, because you're not dumping everything on them with all your backstory all at once.
The other thing I wanted to add goes into the direction of role-playing again. If you make up something for your character, a little secret in the background story or something, make sure as a DM you know all the character sheets and the history. Because especially if it's a new campaign, then you end up where we were back when I started playing, when people actually tried to really role-play, and we were in a tavern and the group just got together and one of the guys said, "Oh, what do you do for a living?" "I'm a witcher," which is already bad role playing. And the other guy had just noted one little detail about his character on his sheet, and he just read that aloud. "I swore to kill all witches." and then we fast forward after a ton of very bad decisions and very bad role playing among those two to the moment where I just set fire on the tavern to solve the problem. So everybody has to get out.
Fantastic.
Which is actually something I did a lot
in the beginning.
Burn down taverns to solve the problem.
Oh, I had a character that would set fire to buildings and, you know, then spend money, you know, and then they would pay me to put the fire out. Good money. It was good money that way.
Save my baby.
There's a baby on fire.
Oh, don't worry. I'll make a new one.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's a pity we all live such different places, because we would be the most kick-ass gaming group ever.
No, we would just keep talking about it, I'm pretty sure.
It's true.
Although I'd be afraid to play with rocks. She would, like, set me on fire or steal my cat or...
Kim, I have to tell you that I would never, ever start a game without rocks in it. Especially as a DM. And now what you're saying is true. She will arrange for other people to die, but I mean that's what I'm saying. She does half my work for me. I can really just sort of sit back and watch most of the time.
Oh, great. And on that note,
as we move forward, I don't know when this is going to be posted, but the latest news is that Zynga, the creator of Farmville and all the other online free games for Facebook and whatnot, is going... No, sorry, that's wrong. They're the ones behind Angry Birds, is going public Monday.
Oh, that's somebody else then.
Zynga?
Zynga is Farmville.
Is it? Okay, then they
Angry
are going...
Angry Birds is somebody else.
Okay. So I was right. So Zynga is going public on Monday. So if you have, I don't know, the way IPOs go with a lot of hype,
yeah.
I'm sure that stock options will be on the upper part of at least 150.
Yeah, Angry Birds is Rovio.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Sorry.
Yeah, Zynga is all of the horrible time suck face.
No, the funny thing is they're games I do not play. But what... This brings into our next segment are the free games that we've all played and what are your recommendations. So if you want a little bit of you know, stock in a game company, you know, Zynga's going, and if you want to buy me some stock, go ahead. That's fine. I'll gladly accept it.
The genius of Zynga is that they're free to play, but for anything good, you have to spend money.
Right.
So they're really microtransaction driven.
They pioneered that that concept with the gaming, and a lot of people are following that.
Yeah. Well, and we've talked about this before. It's not necessarily bad if it's well implemented, but it's easy to go bad.
Well, I remember, I think the first people that kind of tried to implement it would be, what is it, GTO, the driving game.
Turismo,
yeah, where...
Well, they were selling in-game advertising, weren't they? Like,
right.
They were selling
to the companies.
They were selling in-game advertising.
Yeah, like you had a Coke billboard that you drove past while you were playing.
If you wanted a Ferrari, it would cost, and I think on G4, the game station, they actually came up with an unreal amount of like $2,000. If you wanted all the cars with all the bells and whistles, this $49.95 game would cost you like $2,000.
That's nuts.
It's nuts, yes. And since we're talking online games, you have games that have followed suit, such as D&D Online, which is free to play.
Yeah, D&D Online is free to play now. They have microtransaction shops. And it's interesting, because there are some that have been doing that for a while. We've talked about Kingdom of Loathing before. They're probably one of the, I mean, someone's going to correct me in the comments, I'm sure. But I think they're one of the older ones that I know of that has had that model where they're free to play, but you can support the developers by buying Mr. Accessory for $10 in the shop.
Right.
But they actually, I mean, I love Kingdom of Loathing. I've been playing it off and on for years because it's just funny. Mm-hmm. It's well written and funny. Like, there's this place where you have to go, and it's the orc level, but the orcs are all frat boys, and they're constantly at war with the hippies over in the next area, and so there's all these you have to gather items. Like,
is that a browser based game?
It is a browser based game, and all the art is little stick figures. If you're ever at Dragon Con and you see people with the stick figure that's got a sword in one hand and a martini in the other, that's the Kingdom of Loathing kind of mascot.
I'm a fan of stick figure games.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Online. There's a really great one that's free, and it's Space Invaders. And I'll play the hell out of Space Invaders. And there's little stick figures. They're great.
Like, I'm trying to remember. There's like, I think that one of the most ultra rare encounters in Kingdom of Loathing is Scott Baio. And he turns you into the Beowulf or something.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
And you're like a werewolf Scott Baio. I've never experienced it because it's apparently an ultra rare thing that will only happen like from 1201 on the blue moon or some kind of thing. Oh, but wow. it's lots of, like, there's a like the White Forest, and in the White Forest there's a white castle, and all of the enemies are like white lions and white snakes. It's full of little things like that. It's really, really cute and really fun. But now, I know, didn't EverQuest just go free to play, and World of Warcraft just went free to play?
EverQuest has been, well, now the original EverQuest has been free to play for a while. Long time. World of Warcraft is, I don't know about the current EverQuest. I know DC Online just went free to play.
And didn't the Star Trek one, either the Star Trek or the Star Wars ones, just went free to play recently?
Star Trek one or two for the whole year, but now they have a date in January.
Yeah. And I knew that was coming up.
Star Wars has got a separate, which is also a browser-based game, but it's set up like a MMORPG, which is free to play. And also, that's another one with the, it's set up very much like DDO, where you can go buy things in the game for your character for cash.
Tom, what are you were playing something before you got on? What are you playing?
I was playing League of Legends. I don't know if any of you heard of that.
No, why not?
Anyone? Bueller? No, good.
No.
League of Legends, I'm not sure if I get the history of the game right, but I think it started as a Warcraft 3 mod. There were DOTA maps, modded maps for Warcraft 3, where you chose one champion whom you would play only, and you would slay minions to gain experience points and level up and choose the right skills, and of course you would also fight against other champions. You would usually have a group of 3 to 5 people in the game that you would play along with against another group of people. And the basic objective of the game is, of course, destroy the base of your opponent, which only consists of a few buildings, because generally you would meet in the middle and just battle it and use special skills and spells and what have you to defeat them. And League of Legends made that an own complete game, free to play, not browser-based. And they earn money, of course, by you buying different champions, which you can only unlock by buying either with in-game value, which you get actually by just playing, or with real money. And real money is only accelerating your advance in the game. It's not really an advantage. It just means you don't have to play that much.
Yeah. And I prefer things like that because, like, for me personally, one of the main reasons I don't play MMOs so much is because I don't have the time. You know, it's when I was younger, I had a lot of time and little money. Now I have more money, but a lot less time. So sometimes you can trade off between those and still actually get a good experience, and that's all right. I was just looking at the big Wikipedia list of free mass MMOs, and I was just laughing to myself because it's listing Second Life on there.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, so, first of all, does anybody really still think Second Life is a game? And second of all, does anyone really still go to Second Life?
You know, the funny thing is Science Friday still has some sort of thing going on with Second Life.
Well, it was so funny because all of the like corporations and stuff thought that Second Life was going to be huge, and they all went and got on Second Life. Mm-hmm. So it was like entirely populated by corporate shills and no actually real people.
It's probably why there's no real people.
Yeah.
Was there any gameplay involved with that thing?
Not really. There was a steampunk area that all you could do, you could deck out your character all steampunk-like, but you just wander around aimlessly.
Sims with no objectives.
Right, yeah.
Like, you could build your little house and build your little avatar, but there was nothing to actually do. Like, there wasn't a game. It was just a, like, virtual hangout spot with a really high lag time.
Yeah, it's mostly good if you just really wanted to change clothes a lot.
Yeah,
it's a Barbie
instead of doing it in
Barbie.
Real life.
Yeah, but then you know you could just get The Sims and do that, and then you know you had the chance to make your little people do things and laugh when they pee themselves and drown in the pool.
That's right.
Wizards of the Coast has got a new D&D. Game that you play through Facebook. I think it's called Neverwinter Nights. It's still in beta, but anybody can play it. And I've actually been playing it, and it's I'm enjoying it. It's very simplistic, but it's, you know, you make up your character and you go through a dungeon.
Yeah. Well, there was the Dragon Age tie-in Facebook game was kind of like that, and that was actually not bad.
Yeah, this thing is pretty cool. You can either you've got one character and you recruit other people's characters to go with you in a dungeon. And it's if you recruit a friend's character, you don't have to pay for them. Mm. So I had several other friends who started playing and they all sort of dropped off. So I just made up several dummy accounts for Facebook and
Zuckerberg's going to come after you now.
Well, it just shows it shows the extent to which some people will go to play with themselves. But it's been nice. The good thing about it is something that you mentioned is that you can sit down and play it for 10 minutes and then move on. Which I appreciate.
The thing with me with all those Facebook games that kept harassing you to harass your friends.
Yeah.
Some of them I thought were pretty entertaining, but I'm like, no, I don't want to post this to my wall. No, I don't want to ask all my friends to give me, you know, bullets for my gun. No, I don't. No, I don't. Leave me alone and leave my friends alone. Ah! And then I stopped playing Facebook games.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
I don't know. I guess I'm too antisocial to play multiplayer stuff because I always just end up getting annoyed with everybody and leaving. Like when I was playing EVE Online for a while and I actually really liked it at first, but I got to the point where I could no longer solo play and I had to like group up with people and I don't know if I just have a weird schedule or like it's hard enough for me to coordinate social times with people in real life. If I have to like have a second calendar to do my online gaming, that's just too much trouble for me. And I'm going to go play Skyrim.
Yeah.
Cause that's on my time.
Yeah. Well, my wife and I both used to play World of Warcraft and we would play together.
I did too.
And for a very short time.
Short.
But ultimately, that was one of the things that drove us away from it, was we would get on and, you know, our friends who, you know, were our friends, we would like, you know, we enjoyed chatting with them. You know, they would always want to go, you know, do some dungeon or whatever and want us to come along with them. And we just didn't. We wanted to get on there and chat with our friends or, you know, go kill some mooks or something. But, you know, we didn't want to get into a 2-hour, you know, dungeon crawl. And then we felt bad about it, and we would always feel guilty. And then we were like trying to avoid people. And then we're like, you know what? This is ridiculous. Let's just put this away.
It's like, yeah, why do I have to do the cocktail party pretend I'm not meeting your eyes thing? Whoops, I didn't see your handle there. Sorry, gotta go.
Yeah.
The internet, bringing all of the awkwardness of real life into your online world.
All right, well, what's next?
All right, so the next thing we were going to talk about is actually leading into video games, because this has been a huge, huge, huge November. For especially for console games, but also for PC games. And it's a shame Doc had to work, because he and I probably were the primary instigators of this particular topic. But I'll let anybody else go first. Have you picked up anything new, or is there anything that's on the upcoming release list that you're really excited about for PC or console electronic games?
I'm excited about Skyrim, but I haven't gotten it yet.
Oh, we'll talk about that in a minute.
I'm very eager to hear your impressions.
I actually have the latest Assassin's Creed lying around here, but I haven't played it yet because I haven't played the parts in between, and I feel kind of weird.
Oh, the like 2 and Brotherhood?
Yep, the parts 2-1 and 2-2.
Yeah.
So, I played the Dead Space thing on the iPad, and that was fun. It was I think it was the precursor to the actual story of, only because my time is taken up that I don't even have really time to play on a console or a PC. So a lot of the game developers are now doing these shorter first-person shooter type things for the iPad now.
Right.
And Dead Space is sort of what happens before the actual console game.
So how does that play to you on the iPad? Because it would seem like that would seem kind of an awkward thing for me, but
it's really kind of neat because of your it's all swiping and stuff. Once you get the controls down of, and Kevin, I think you played, what did you play on the iPad? Your controls are kind of neat because it's all swiping and stuff.
Interesting.
So the only thing is you might need something just to prop up. You know, that's why there's
Order and Chaos. Order and
Chaos, yeah. You know, so that you could, a lot of your functionality is using your hands, is not necessarily remembering what is a keystroke and stuff like that, but it's very Star Trek like.
Interesting.
You know, you're doing a lot of swiping. Huh. And forward and whatever, but Dead Space for the iPad was really good.
That's cool. Yeah, so I've pulled up a release list, and so I'm gonna go through the big ones that I haven't played to see if anyone's played them and has anything to say. All right, so Batman Arkham City.
I haven't played it, but I have seen some reviews on television, and they just absolutely stellar.
Yeah. Uncharted 3.
No.
I have Uncharted 1 and 2 that I bought to play, but I haven't gotten very far into them because I've heard that they're like Assassin's Creed, kind of like the platformy bits of Assassin's Creed, which I enjoyed. So, Rox, do you have a 3DS or do you have the other one?
No, I have the DS Lite. Okay.
Because I was wondering if anyone had a chance to play the 3D Super Mario game.
No.
Because I'm interested to hear kind of how that went. All right. Doc, I know, is going to play the other Saints Row, but doesn't have it. Anybody have tried Skyward Sword, the new Zelda game?
Mm-mm.
Nope.
Except for?
It's for the Wii.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I have to dust off the Wii. I think it's buried under a pile of something in my spare room.
Right. You know, I loved my Wii until I got my new television, and now I can't play it anymore.
Yeah.
Because I got the high def TV, and now the Wii looks horrible.
That's the thing. You think you're fine, and then you get the high def, and you're like, ooh, how did I ever live? Yeah. I'll tell you what, though. Almost the entire reason that I bought a high def television was because I was playing Tales of Vesperia, and I couldn't read the little thing, the text. Like, and when you're playing a JRPG, if you can't read the text, you're really in trouble. Like, I had a really hard time reading it. I'm like, that's it.
Right. Was that also a Wii game?
No, it was for the Xbox 360, but I was playing it on a standard def television.
Well, yeah, with the Xbox, it's, at least you can, it sends out a high def signal.
Yeah. I was like, that's it. I'm getting a high def television. Mike was like, you're what now? I'm like, I just can't take it anymore. So before we talk about Assassin's Creed and Skyrim, which have been the things I've been doing for the last several weeks, one thing that we have potentially to look forward to, I'm interested if it turns out to be good or not. I don't know. Is the Star Wars The Old Republic MMO.
Oh.
Which is supposed to be building off of the Knights of the Old Republic games, which were really good for the most
part. Yeah. Yeah, they were. Yeah.
And so if it was good like that, it will be awesome. But I'm worried because nobody has successfully made a good Star Wars or Star Trek MMO so far. They've all failed in one way or the other.
I keep thinking that eventually they will have had to have made so many mistakes that the only thing left to do will be to succeed.
We can only hope.
All right. The thing is they keep failing. Everybody wants to play,
right?
You know, the Empire. Yeah. I hate to say that. And yet the first go round, it's like, well, if you can't do that, forget it.
I want to become
Grand Moff Tarkin. That's just me.
I always want to be a chaotic neutral smuggler who's playing both sides against the middle.
You know me too. It's the smuggler. That's where it's at.
You play rogues in D&D as well.
Yeah. Well, I play everything in D&D, but yeah, I definitely like that feel.
Yeah. That's what I want to do. Well, and the other big releases coming up next year that I'm particularly excited about is, of course, Mass Effect 3, Be Still My Heart, and BioShock Infinite, which looks cool.
Now, are they going to keep going on that, or are they going to tie it off at however many?
What, Infinite? I don't know. That we just know that they're coming out with the third one, and it's by the people who did the first one, not the people who did the second one, so it should be good again. We hope. Knock wood. But, I mean, did you see the trailer rocks they did with the flying city and the zeppelins?
Oh, my God, yeah. Yes, we do watch the trailers at work whenever we can, you know. So we're plugged into Kotaku a lot, so.
So that's looking pretty exciting. So the big ones, the two new things that hit a couple days apart from each other, and I have been alternating between them pretty obsessively, is, of course, Skyrim and the latest Assassin's Creed.
Now, my brother-in-law has been playing the hell out. Now, the cool thing about Skyrim, which I don't have the system, but I'm aware of it, is they did a time lapse for the environment.
Oh, I heard about that. Yeah, the
environment. And it is gorgeous.
Skyrim is amazing.
And my brother-in-law has been playing the hell out of Skyrim. And my sister, she's like, yeah, it's like watching a movie.
It really is. The thing
she's
love.
Like, she's like, I'm not playing, but I'm watching. You know, she's doing something else, but she'd look up. And she's like, oh, my gosh. She goes, it's really amazing that you fail to, you know, you realize that you've been watching this for like a couple hours.
Yeah. I mean, I remember I was doing some mission cleaning out a burial tomb or something, and I came, it had been daylight when I went in, and when I came out it was night, and I stepped out of the doorway and it was a beautiful clear night and the aurora was all around me, and I really stood there for like 5 minutes just turning around and looking because it was so freaking gorgeous. I mean, it was just amazing. I've really, really, really been enjoying Skyrim, because if you liked Fallout 3 but you thought that it wasn't pretty enough, Skyrim, because it plays very similarly to Fallout 3, only it's much less glitchy, at least in my experience. And it's prettier. Like, there's flowers and trees and colors. It's not all post-apocalyptic gray and brown and rubble. You know, there's jagged mountains and snow. And it's amazing to me, like, there's places where just the quality of the light really conveys a certain mood. Like, there's this, you know, there's all of the towns are very different. And I'd like to kind of compare and contrast. The two current companies I think that are making the best electronic RPGs are, of course, BioWare and Bethesda.
Mm-hmm.
But, and they're both Western RPGs, but apart from that, they're so different because BioWare has got fantastic character development, really great writing and plotting, but their location coding is subpar. We talked about the disappointment of Dragon Age 2, where they had the same cave over and over and over again, and they didn't even take out the place you weren't supposed to go. They just made it so you couldn't open the door. Like, you've been in that same mine before and been in that room, and you can still see the room on the mini map. You just can't open the door anymore.
Oh, wow. That's lazy.
It was so lazy. It was terrible.
Kim, I do have a question on this, because this is an interesting, you know, what we were talking about, you know, buying stuff. Is my coworker, Mitch, is going to wait on Skyrim because he wants to wait until it becomes one of the best of.
Yeah, when you get
the so he doesn't have to spend a lot of the money for the upgrades and stuff. So,
well, you could do that, or you might be impatient.
Uh huh.
And want to play it now.
Well, how much? I mean, how does like upgrades and stuff affect, you know, gameplay? I mean, does it add?
There haven't been any yet. I mean, based on my experience with Fallout 3, here's what it is that I actually didn't buy Fallout 3 until it had been out for a while, because I have this troubled relationship with shooters where I don't like them. And when I first started playing console games, I was really bad at anything that was first person viewpoint, because I would get turned around, I'd get lost, somebody would come up behind me and shoot me. The first time I tried to play BioShock, it was just a bad thing all around. I ended up using all my bullets shooting at sounds that were not really anything, it was just sounds. And then I had to try to attack turrets with wrenches because I had no ammo left. It was bad. But, and I tell you, with Fallout 3 was the first in first-person game that I played for any length of time, and I was seduced by its art design. They had, I love that sort of, they call it ray gun gothic, that sort of retro-futurism that they do in that series. And they have all of the little stuff where it's supposed to be like ad copy, you know, all of the manuals and the boxes and stuff. And I had seen all the materials and I'm like, this is so my thing. Like, this is exactly the kind of stuff I like. I've got to try it, you know. And so I was in the GameStop, like my local GameStop, like they recognize me every time I come in. They're like, hey, haven't seen you in a while. What you been playing? You know, it's sad. I actually ran into the guy from our local GameStop at Target in the game section. He's like, you're cheating on me. I'm like, shut up. They're having a sale. But because there is a GameStop like a mile down the road from my house, so we go there a lot. But, you know, so I was like, I don't know. Is it good? He's like, no, it's really, 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 really good. Get it. You'll like it. I'm like, okay. So I got it when it was like $30. You know, it had been out for a while. And I loved it. I ended up liking it so much. I mean, it helped that Liam Neeson had a major part at the beginning, because I have a crush on Liam Neeson. He's so great. But, you know, I was really taken in by it. And the thing about the Fallout DLC is that you don't, like, even after you beat the main game, you could still go in and play the DLC, or kind of at any point along the main quest. It's just you find other quests that weren't there originally. You know, if you go to a certain place, you can pick up some new quests and some new materials, maybe new dungeons to do, stuff like that. Because these worlds are so vast that, you know, it's easy for them to, like, pop up a new door into a hillside somewhere and then make a whole big level be underneath it, or, you know, whatever there is. I mean, Fallout actually had really good DLC, because there was the one where it let you go another, like, 10 levels of gameplay. Like, it extended the main quest line and gave you the ability to level up, I think, from 20 to 30. And then there were a lot of other smaller ones. But, you know, it's probably, if you have other stuff to do, it might be worth it to wait a while and get it when it comes out. I mean, heck, you can get Oblivion, which was Elder Scrolls 4, the one that came before Skyrim. And you can get that with all of its stuff for $30 or something now and play it and probably be busy until Skyrim Game of the Year edition comes out. But I don't know. I mean, I think if you think of it in terms of value for your gaming dollar, even at full price, which is, you know, like $60 for the consoles, Skyrim has a really good value, much better than like going to the movies or anything like that. Because, I mean, honestly, you could just play and play and play and play and play and play and play. The one thing that's kind of funny about it is like evil is in no hurry. Like, apparently the minions of evil work a flex time schedule because, you know, you can just get around to the main quest line whenever you feel like it. I mean, I have spent a day playing Skyrim where all I was doing was going around doing quests for, like, the Thieves Guild.
You know, that actually brings up a very specific point that I wanted to ask about. I played Oblivion, and at some point in it, I kind of lost the thread.
Yeah.
And had
you forgot what Oblivion was about?
I just had a really hard time finding the main quest again. I got really involved in the Thieves Guild and the the gladiatorial combats and, you know, and that kind of stuff. And I ended up, you know, at some point I ended up way off in the countryside, and I'm like, what was I supposed to be doing? And you know, I was trying to go back through the logs, and I couldn't figure it out. And I sort of meandered for a couple of days and then sort of forgot about it. But my understanding is with the new one, that they actually have some kind of technology in place that sort of, after a while, it tries to sort of point you back in the right direction, and get you moving off on the main quest again. Have you noticed anything like that, or maybe it's just that subtle?
I don't know. It may be subtle, or it may be that it happens when you're further along in the quest. My understanding of what happens is the main quest is the one about the dragons, basically. Is where you're fighting dragons. The dragons have come back. They've started to wake up again. They're threatening the countryside. And I will say that can put you in for some real pulse-pounding action, because you will be, you know, riding your horsey along the countryside, going to, like, deliver, you know, a circlet to the circle of enchanters to run an errand so that you can make some extra gold to buy a house. And then all of a sudden, the ground shakes beneath you as a dragon swoops down. And you're like, holy shit. Which is great, you know. Or there's, you know, sometimes there's...
I was just going out fighting, for a meal.
Yeah, like, you're fighting with bandits or something, and a dragon comes down. And all of a sudden, everybody turns to try to shoot at the dragon.
You know? Really?
Or that's nice. Or you can, like, try to hide and let the dragon and your enemies finish each other off and then swoop in to kind of get the remainders. But it actually, they will come upon you, like, when you least expect it. I remember, oh my gosh, just last week I was trying to do a quest for, like, the mages, and I was in, you can fast travel in Skyrim. I heard you couldn't in Oblivion. I didn't play Oblivion, but, it's similar to the Fallout 3 fast travel system, where once you've discovered a location, you can fast travel to it.
Right. Actually, I believe it was the same in Oblivion. I seem to remember that.
So, the closest place that I had fast traveled to the place I was supposed to go. So I went to fast travel to there. I popped my head up, and two dragons and a band of bandits are having a battle right on top of my head.
Wow.
And I was like, oh crap. And I literally like turned around and ran as fast as I could away until I could like find a mine to hide in. Cause I was like, there is no way.
That's hysterical.
Like, I was trying to shoot at a dragon, and a bandit came and shoot me in the back. I was like, excuse me, dragons. Two dragons.
But money. There's always yeah, money exactly. to be made.
But my understanding is that after a certain point in the plot, the dragons start to emerge, and the more you wait, the more of them come out. But if you have timing, you can apparently go to where they're going to hatch or come out and catch them when they're weak. So I think that may be sort of the impetus to... There's also a civil war in the game between two of the human factions. And, well, there's actually kind of three factions fighting. But so there's the original inhabitants of Skyrim, the Nords, who beat them. And then there's the Empire. So the Empire and the kind of Nordic insurrection are fighting. And then there's these kind of guerrilla fighters who were there before the Nords who are trying to win back cities.
Oh, wow.
So part of it is you can take sides with either the Empire or the Stormcloaks, which is sort of the Nordic insurrection. And depending on if you do those quests, the cities will start to convert.
Oh, man. So, see, now I'm so excited to play this game.
Yeah, like they start, you actually will start, and when you go into the castles, they'll have a strategy map with little colors. And apparently as you are working, like one side or the other will start to win and start to flip cities. And so, like, when the city is conquered, the new force will install a new ruler. So if you haven't done that whole like favor quest line to get your house in that city, you have to start over because it's a new person and they don't like you.
Wow.
So it's actually really neat. And I mean, you can, there's almost a whole other game's worth of stuff in each of the main kind of factions that you can align yourself with, where you can do, like, there's a faction of warriors that you can join. There's the Thieves Guild, there's an Assassin Guild, there's the Mage College. Like, and there's, I think there may be even a couple more that you can actually do. There's a whole pretty intense line of quests for each of them. And it's almost a game in itself. So, I mean, there's so much to do. And even if you finish all the built-in stuff, there are apparently an infinite number of procedurally generated quests. So, like, the people at the Mage College will always have something for you to go get it to, for them to enchant. Or the people at the Thieves Guild will always have something that they want you to go and steal. So, if you just want to hang out and do a couple little mini quests here and there, apparently you can do that indefinitely. Just as long as you want.
You don't mind the dragons building up on you.
Yeah, huh. Exactly. So, I mean, really, it's like today I feel like I want to go around and pick flowers so that I can raise my alchemy. That's the other thing I really like about Skyrim, is that the crafting is really robust. And I was one of those people when I played EverQuest, I never went to any of the levels because I spent all my time shooting spiders to harvest silk to spin so that I could become a tailor.
Right.
Absolutely. And in Skyrim, you can level up doing nothing but crafting.
Oh, I love that.
Because the way the level system works, it's really neat. There are no classes per se. You pick a race, but you don't pick a class. And even though I didn't pick a class, I'm still basically playing a rogue. But what happens is you have all these different skills, like the whole realm of potential skills. Smithing and alchemy and enchanting and three or four schools of magic and one-handed weapons and two-handed weapons and heavy armor and light armor and all the different kinds of skills that you can have in a game like this. And as you use them, you get points towards a level. And every time you get another level in your skill, it nudges you towards leveling up.
Wow.
Okay.
And every time you gain a level, you get to add like 10 points to either your health, stamina, or magic, and you get a perk. So if you've played like Fallout 3, you had the perks you could get at Fallout 3. It's like that. So, like, for instance, lock picking is one of the skills. So every time you pick a lock, you get a little bit of credit towards the next level of lock picking if you fail, and a lot if you succeed. And the harder the lock is, the better. So theoretically, if you were really, really patient and good at it, you could pick a master level lock right off if you had tons and tons and tons of time and lock picks to just sit there and fail until you managed to find the tiny, tiny little sliver. More points you get in lock picking, like the bigger the arc can be where you're at the right spot. Like, it's the same lockpick game they had in Fallout 3 where you have to rotate the lockpick and then rotate the lock. Right. So what you really do feel like you're getting better at it the more you do it. And then the perks that you can take are things like all of the apprentice level locks are easier, all of the adept level locks are easier, or things like people don't notice you when you pick a lock, or when you've picked a lock, you automatically get a copy of the key to keep. You know, there's various different things you can do like that. So, like, for archery, the perks are things like all of your bows do 20% more damage, or you can slow time when you're aiming your bow, things like that. But your archery will gradually do more damage as you go up in skill, even if you don't take any perks. So it really is, the more you do stuff, it's like your skills level with your playstyle. If you always use a greatsword, your two-handed will increase. If you always use magic, your magic will increase. But only the kinds of spells you use. So I sneak and pick locks, and I'm a stealth sniper, basically. I have lots of points in archery and sneaking, so I try to hide and then hit them with a bow and arrow from far away when they don't see me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have lots. So I'll get points in archery. I'll get points in sneaking.
And you can do headshots too, right?
Yes. Yeah. You can. It's beautiful. But so it really kind of follows what you actually do. So I use a lot of illusion magic because there's a muffle spell that makes you quieter. So I have a lot more points in illusion than I do in the spell that lets you shoot fire out of your hands, because that's not very sneaky, you know. But it's really great because you can totally customize. So if you want to be, for instance, somebody who fights with a sword in one hand and a fireball in the other, you can do that. Or if you want to heal with one hand and stab with a dagger with the other, you can do that. Or if you want to have both hands with a bow, but you want to wear enchanted boots of stomping or whatever it may be. And so, you know, I have gone levels without fighting because I was spending a lot of time, you know, smithing or training or, you know, learning how to do lockpicks. Like, I literally went into a museum and went around and picked the lock of every display case. Not because I wanted to steal the shit, but because I wanted to practice lockpicking.
Wow.
But it did. I got, like, a whole level from that.
Wow. That's great.
So it's really nice because it rewards you for doing whatever it is that you're doing. You don't get rewarded for completing a quest. You get rewarded for the combat or the sneakiness or the locks you picked. Or whatever it is that you did.
Oh, cool.
So it's really pretty neat because I find it's a good fit for me because I love to do crafting. I like to make stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it has become fun as I've leveled up my pickpocket skills to be able to be like, you were just rude to me. Whoop, there goes your wallet.
Is there a maximum level?
No, there isn't a maximum level, but you can only level up when you get a point in a skill, get enough points in a skill. So, and there's a limited number of skills. So I think I read that if you got to 100 in all of your skills, it would make you be like level 80 something.
Okay.
So like there is a finite amount of points you can get because once you've maximized every single skill, well.
But you're not going to max out your level before you max out your skills and then not be able to pursue other skills.
No. Right. Because like, I mean, I am like a level 40 something right now. And so I have high speech, high lockpick, high archery, high pickpocket, high sneak, that kind of stuff.
Well, they have to have an end so that they're, right. you'll buy the Skyrim 2 yeah. game.
Well, then if I decided... You know, now that I wanted to change and be a heavy armor wearing greatsword swinger, I could get some heavy armor, put on a greatsword, and I'd start to level up in those skills instead.
Oh, right. Wow.
So, like, you level up in your armor skill when you get hit by something.
Ah.
So, it's actually very clever the way they have it set up, and I think it feels very natural, and you get a lot of flexibility. So, if you don't want to be a pure mage because you want to wear armor, well, you can wear armor and cast spells. Just put the armor on, and you will start to level in that armor skill. So, and that's the thing. I mean, I can see where some people might find it kind of slow because there's nothing that's urging you on. And that, again, is where the contrast with the BioWare games comes in. Like in Mass Effect 2, where if you took your sweet time once you hit that one point, all your people would die. I was really upset about that. I was like, but I had to finish those side quests before I went. Nope, they're all dead. You took too long. And I'm like, since when do video games do that? But that is the one thing, though, is that in general, the acting and the kind of writing and the story is a lot better in the BioWare games, but the variety of quests and the freedom and the variety of atmosphere is a lot better in the Bethesda games. So, like, you know, every single city in Skyrim has its own personality, and it's very different from each other. Like, there's this one city where you go there and you feel like it's autumn, and another one where you go and it feels like a clear but cold winter day. Just because of the way the light is and the thing, it's a pretty amazing, and it's a very great accomplishment on their part. I'm
I'm very impressed.
Cool. Clearly.
So, yeah. Sorry, I just talked for like 20 minutes. But
okay, what about Kim. I don't know. I've been told there are a lot of glitches in the program. Dragons flying backwards and such.
I haven't seen that, but that would be awesome.
That was the most recent patch. Was yeah. not good. They said that that's where those came from.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's what I'll say about this. In a game like this where you can theoretically, where when you think about the number of variables there are because you have so much freedom, you're never going to have a game of this scope that doesn't have glitches in it. Because they can't possibly test every particular combination. Like, if you go to this cave while wearing dragon boots, after you've done the Thieves Guild quest, but when you've only done two of the assassin quests, and you pick this room before that room, then it's going to glitch. You know, there's that kind of stuff. I do know that it is considerably less glitchy than Fallout 3 or Fallout New Vegas were on my particular system. I have seen a couple minor things, but nothing that's broken the game. Like, the biggest thing I noticed, I got shot with an arrow, and the arrow was sticking out of my face for like 5 hours afterwards.
Did you make screenshots?
It was pretty funny.
Screenshots. Actually,
I don't know how to do that on my Xbox.
Oh, Xbox, okay.
It's console. So that was pretty amusing. Because it was just sticking out of my face, and I changed helmet, it didn't work. But then eventually it went away.
Really dramatic acne.
Yeah, I know, right? So there's that. I've had a couple times, like one time I had a glitch where there's a quest where you go to a place to meet somebody, and you're met by the guards who have killed him. And then they put you in jail and you have to escape. Well, the next time after I did that and escaped from jail, that I went back to the original spot, the guards were still there and they tried to arrest me again. But they couldn't because I'd already done the quest. So they just kept popping back up and I'd kill them and they'd pop back up and I'd kill them and they'd pop back up and I'd kill them. So I reloaded a different save and didn't go back into that room.
Oh.
So I don't know if they're still there. I'm assuming if I go off and go out of that city and come back later, they'll probably have been fixed. But that's the only really major thing that I've experienced. I know some people have had other things, but I know that they rewrote the engine, or they wrote a new engine for this one. They didn't use that same middleware engine that they were using in Fallout. So a lot of the bad things where you're like clipping through a rock, or you get into Las Vegas and then your game freezes and dies, Fallout New Vegas. I haven't had anything like that so far. So far, so good for me. Knock on wood.
So that's a buy recommendation from you.
I would say
that's a big buy.
Big buy. If you enjoyed any game, if you enjoyed previous games in this series, or you enjoyed Fallout 3 and you like swords or whatever...
if you play computer
swords and dragons,
right. It's great. I mean, and the dragons are genuinely scary. Like, I literally have had, or they're trolls too when you're low level or really hard to kill. There will be a thing where that you will feel the controller shake and you'll see the shadow, because they have the lighting effects are really good, and sometimes even before you hear it you'll see the shadow go over your head and you'll find yourself like flinching. You're like, oh crap, there's a dragon.
No kidding.
Yeah, so it's really, really impressive. Like, I've actually noticed, like, clouds drifting across the sun, like, from the way the light changes in the game. So it's really sophisticated that way.
Cool.
And then the other buy recommendation I have is the new Assassin's Creed game, Assassin's Creed Revelations, which I always want to call Assassin's Creed Revolutions because of Deus Ex Human Revolution that came out earlier in the fall. But I will say... Ubisoft has done it again. They have taken a game that was very strong and taken out anything that was kind of annoying and made the parts that were good better. And that's, again, they did that in Assassin's Creed 2. They did that again in Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, and they did that again in this game. And I'm really impressed, because it's not often that you see a studio that seems to really understand why people like their game and bump up those bits of it like they've done with this series. You're Ezio again. I think this is the last of the three games that Ezio is going to be in. And he's now, I think he's supposed to be like in his 50s. He's older. He's got some gray hair. It's funny. He actually sort of looks and sounds like the guy in the Dos Equis Most Interesting Man in the World commercials.
Oh, yeah.
But I kind of love that because I'll like play and swoop down and kill somebody. I'll be like, stay thirsty, my friends. Because I'm just that dumb. There actually is a point where he's talking to a lady or whatever, and he says something like, she's like, who are you? And he goes, I'm the most interesting man you'll ever meet. And I'm like, ha, 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 ha. But
perhaps it wasn't an accident.
Yeah, yeah. But it's actually really good because they have beefed up. You're in Constantinople this time, and they have beefed up the part of the game where you recruit people and you send them out to other cities to do things. They've made that a whole mini game now. There is actually the thing they had in Brotherhood where you were fighting with the Borgias for territory. They have that, but you also you don't just win the tower and it's yours forever. They actually will sometimes attack and try to get it back, and you have to defend it.
Oh.
Which it kind of extends the fun of that part. And if they attack and you have to defend it, it's actually a sort of tower defense mini game that you have to play, where you have to set, they'll come to attack your tower and you have to set defenses to kind of keep them out. So there's that. There's the sort of strategy, kind of turn-based strategy-ish mini game with you sending the assassins out to, it's called Mediterranean Control or something like that. And then there is there are the hidden tomb levels where they're like puzzle platformers that they've had in the past. There's a lot more variety. They keep adding kind of new mini games and new things that you can do. And of course there's still multiplayer. I don't play it because, as we've established, I'm not a big multiplayer person, but they have apparently beefed up the multiplayer as well. But I'm really enjoying it. The story is interesting. It's different because when you come to the new city, there's already an assassin presence there. So you're kind of the mentor taking over the established organization. So you're helping them to sort of beef up their supplies. Oh, there's also a crafting mechanic that they've added where rather than just having smoke bombs, you can actually have three different types of bombs at a time. There are lethal bombs, and there's tactical bombs, which is like they make a noise and the guard will go investigate it, stuff like that. Or there's strategic bombs where they would like slow the guard down, things like that. So there's actually there's three different types of shell, there's three different types of gunpowder, and there's three different types of each of the fillings. So you have a lot of variation in the type of bomb you can use. So you can make a one that bursts on impact, one that has a fuse delay, one that's like a tripwire. And then you can have small, medium, or large explosive radius. And so you can choke them with poison gas, you can kill them with explosive force, you can kill them with shrapnel, or you can distract them with the noise, you can distract them with a smoke signal, or you can make a gold bomb that will make all of the townspeople try to get the gold, and they will fight off any guard that tries to get by them. So you can use the crowd to
incite a riot.
You can. Oh, it's great.
That's right up Roxanne's alley.
Yeah. Yeah. There's the smoke bomb where you can hide and get away. There's a bomb where you can put Caltrops across the road and it'll slow the guards. There's a lot of kind of new tactical options with the new crafting system for the bombs, which is really pretty cool.
Oh my God, occupy the Borgias.
Well, and the other thing that's interesting is that you are in Constantinople and the Ottomans are in control of Constantinople, but the Templars are inciting a faction of Byzantines. So you have your group, which is the Assassins, and the Ottomans who are in control, and then the Byzantines. The Ottomans are neutral to you unless you do something, you know, a crime in front of them. The Byzantines are always trying to kill you. But the Ottomans and the Byzantines hate each other. So sometimes you can get the Ottomans to come attack the Byzantines instead of you having to do it. So they've added a lot more kind of strategic options than just the ordinary gameplay. And it's a very interesting game. And I'd probably still be playing it if Skyrim hadn't come out. I played Skyrim for like the first 3 or 4 days. Then I bought Assassin's Creed and played it for a week. And then I went back to Skyrim, and I've been playing that. But as soon as I'm tired of Skyrim, I'll probably go back and play Assassin's Creed some more, because it is really fun. Oh, and there are levels where you actually control Desmond,
where they've actually managed to make Desmond fairly interesting. I never thought it could happen. Desmond Miles, most boring man in the world, is actually fairly interesting in this one so far. And then sometimes you actually play you play Ezio having flashbacks to Altair, who was the guy from the first game. So they actually kind of have you have levels where you play as all three of the main sort of protagonists that you've had so far.
Oh.
And there's a hot redheaded book dealer who is his ally. So,
well, book dealers are always good.
I always love a kick-ass book dealer.
Uh huh.
I'm pretty sure that Ezio is going to end up marrying her. That's my feeling.
You want that to happen. That'll be in the fan fiction. So should we move on to holiday recommendations?
Holiday recommendations. I think I've given my two. So
I think so, Kim. Well, wait a minute. In one sentence, you always like the Dr. Layton series, and I do too.
Yes.
Did you buy the new one?
I haven't, because I was told that if I wanted to get any Christmas presents at all, I needed to stop buying myself games in November.
Okay. All right. There you go.
But if it's anything like the other three, then it's awesome and you should buy it.
Oh, okay.
I have no doubt that it's going to be just as great as the other ones were.
Yeah, because I have all the other ones too. I love those things. They're fun.
So yes, I have been cut off from buying myself any more games.
Well, you know, it is near Christmas, Kim.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to give you credit for something.
People keep telling me that I make it hard to buy for myself because I buy the game too quickly. So I'm trying to be more considerate to my loved ones.
So, Dom, what do you have for – what are you playing, or what are you recommending at the moment?
That's tricky because I'm not actually playing any new games. Aside from
it could be an old game, they recycle games all the time.
That's true. Then I would
give a classic.
A real classic? I mean, one you probably can't get anymore.
Yes,
there's always eBay, you know.
Lands of Lore. That's great. Pick a title nobody knows. It's actually I think it was Westwood. Who did that? It was after the Eye of the Beholder saga that was their new role-playing game for the PC. It was great. I don't know how many hours I wasted with that. Never finished it. Great game. Go find that.
Okay, there you go. And Kevin, what about you? What are you playing, or what would you recommend?
I think what I would recommend, not so much a game, but a game developer, is Game Loft, GameLoft. And they make games for like the iOS and other Android, that sort of thing. But their whole concept that they pursue is they take other really popular games and they just rip them off. The Order and Chaos game that we were discussing, that we just briefly mentioned earlier, is a wholesale ripoff of World of Warcraft. And they just released another one, which they're calling, let's see, instead of Modern Warfare, it's called Modern Combat. And these games, they're very inexpensive. They maintain the same feel and sort of artistic direction of the games that they're ripping off, but they are games that you can sit down, you can play for very short bursts at a time, and you can play very inexpensively. And because they're all on your mobile devices, you can take them anywhere. And I have no idea how they have managed to make games that look as good as they do and are as deep as they are, and put them into just, you know, an app for your, you can play it on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just really, you know, maybe they're a little sleazy, but you know, they really make some great, great stuff. So that would be my recommendation. Loft.
All right. My picks are, it's interesting. I got this on paper and they're in the Target flyer, They're actually advertising Settlers of Catan and Ticket to Ride, and this year's winner for best game from Yara Spiel, Quirkle, which is kind of interesting. These are almost games that you would have to go to an independent game store to buy, and now they're being sold at Target. So to me, that's kind of neat, because gaming has, you know, whenever you go to Target and stuff, you're like, don't even bother to go to the, you know, board game section, because they always had crap. You know, they would have your typical Risk, Monopoly.
Sorry.
Right, yes. Oh, my God. So now they're kind of growing up. Their merchandise handlers actually growing up, like, oh, people actually are, you know, when you consider Ticket to Ride,
I've wanted,
like,
that game.
1 million.
So cool.
Okay, here's the cool thing. This is why I brought this up, is, and what Kevin was saying about tying, you know, of reconverting a game into for Android or the iPad. Ticket to Ride is available for the iPad for a half the price. Settlers of Catan is also available for the iPad. I recently got from Fantasy Flight Elder Sign Omens. It's based in the Arkham Horror genre. The artwork's the same. They kind of animated some of the stuff. Basically, you have this Mongo game of Arkham Horror, which is a fantastic game. However, it takes 40 minutes to set up. If you don't know all the rules, you are so screwed. it's almost, you know, Kevin can attest, it can almost be heartbreaking, because it's like, there's so much. There's a guy that actually did a tutorial. It's almost like 90 minutes to watch this guy go through the whole thing, and you're still going to forget stuff.
Yeah.
So Fantasy Flight came up with the board game Elder Signs Omens, and it's basically Arkham Horror Light. It takes place in a museum. So it's kind of like Clue in a way, where this is the cool part. You can go to the gift shop to buy guns. What's not to like about that? So it's, the gameplay is pretty much similar to Arkham Horror, where you would go to certain sections in Arkham Horror to close off gates that have opened up. This is on a smaller scale. The gameplay for the iPad, and I compared this with my coworker who's played the board game version, he's like, it's exactly the same. You would create your, it's a cooperative game. So you can actually play this game with one iPad, and you're just passing it back and forth to people. If you want to do that, this is the great thing about iPad and iPad gaming board games, is you can actually pass your iPad around use it as a board game. You use your group to go to certain sections of the museum to close off or fight the monsters, to gain symbols to close off the major gate where the monster's coming through. And it is a phenomenal game. And it's really cheap. It's only like $6-$7. You know, and when you consider the board game is like around 30.
Wow.
So, yeah. I mean, the thing about the board game, because they all have a lot of pieces. That's the thing about Fantasy Flight games. There's a lot of pieces, a lot of, you know, the game mechanics are good. The learning curve can be really high, and so is the setup. But, you know, if they got Arkham Horror on the iPad, I would so buy it. They could even tack $40 and I will buy it.
I don't know, but that's the thing, is I always wanted to buy the real version of Ticket to Ride, because it has little wooden trains.
Right, but you know,
the thing is,
the animation in the Ticket to Ride for the board game is pretty neat. It's kind of steampunk light,
yeah,
in a way. So, yeah, you don't have a little train, but I mean, this is a game that's very, very popular.
Yeah, I play it on Xbox Live Arcade.
Mm-hmm.
Which it's very good on Xbox Live Arcade.
Right. So, and I know I touted this a while ago, is Card Combat, which is
right.
the Garfield game, which is sort of Magic in a way. And that's kind of an interesting thing because that started out as a free game, but I went ahead and paid $9 just so I can unlock all the cards. And every once in a while, I get the updates for free. So,
oh, that's good.
Yeah. So that's my pick for, you know, the year. So head over. Oh, and just so you know, 20% off at Target for Ticket to Ride, Kim.
Ooh.
So
listeners who might be going to buy me a Christmas present?
Yes. Target. And if you use your Target red card, you get 5% off. Just so you know. If you have one of those Target red credit cards. 5% every day.
Wow.
I know. I could be a spokesperson for Target. So I guess this wraps up our episode for before our year end of the Groove Cafe.
CPC Internets, you ask and we deliver.
Yes, we do.
We are here for you, the Internet.
Yes.
Just
thank
like
you very
you're always
much.
Here for us.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I definitely enjoyed being here.
Well, thank you for joining us in our mad little tea party.
Yeah. Yeah. So, from me, Roxas Fazhouse, Oblique Red, known as Kim, Dom, and our special guest, Kevin Petway, thank you for listening in to the Groove Cafe.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Warm bye, morning. Everyone.
Walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Gru.
This is Kim from needcoffee.com. You've been listening to the needcoffee.com podcast, The Gru Cafe. If you enjoyed The Gru Cafe and would like to hear more, you can make that happen by doing one, or even better, all of the following. Number one, tell a friend about us. Number two, go to iTunes and write a review of needcoffee.com podcasts. Number three, become a member of needcoffee.com. Our goal is to become the world's first 100% reader-supported website named needcoffee.com. For more information, please go to needcoffee.com/membership. Thanks for listening.
End scene.